In the immediate aftermath, the training, the tools, the infrastructure that the government has been working with our state and local partners to put in place started to pay off in terms of the immediate incident response, the investigatory response. A key aspect of it that maybe wasn't fully understood but very important was the degree to which the National Fusion Center Network provides shared situational awareness across the country to every governor, to mayors in major cities, within hours of the event. Critical to keeping things calm and providing that confidence about the, the way forward in the aftermath of that event. There was also a critical role for the Fusion Center Network to support the FBI and the Joint Terrorism Task Force from an investigatory perspective. There was a nexus in different states for the, the two brothers. So we also, kind of came away, looking at that event and thinking that there was a lot of use of ISE tools and frameworks in terms of the examples I highlighted, but also, going forward, just more opportunities for secure and trusted collaboration. The interesting thing about information sharing is that it's an open-ended problem. There's always opportunities to do better. Why? Because information sharing is a buzzword. It's really about secure, trusted collaboration, which is inherently a person-centric kind of activity, right? I collaborate with you, my organization with you, scale that up in a multilateral way. As threats evolve, as technology evolves, there's always opportunities to do better that way. And so we saw that.
Shimendra, I know that the information sharing environment sent its annual report to Congress. And so let's talk a little bit about the differences now, 10 years later, around information sharing, the status of it, the state of information sharing now as compared to not just 10 years ago, but even just compared to last year. I mean, things are moving so quickly. And it seems like there's a lot of progress. Give me your overall take.
Information sharing has improved tremendously within the federal government, between the federal government and our state and local partners in both directions, with the private sector. And you see that with the way that the after-action report by the inspector generals of the two agencies in the intelligence community, DOJ and DHS, highlighted what happened and the government's response, the integrated approach, federal, state, local. We have things like the National Network of Fusion Centers. Those are working with the HIDA centers, high-intensity drug trafficking areas, the RIS centers, regional information sharing systems. So we're reducing fragmentation, overlap, and duplication, and getting more unity of effort around terrorism-related information sharing, also more broadly. We're also seeing reuse of this infrastructure that's been put in place. It's almost a public safety platform, if you like, where that investment's being reused for things like countering heroin. There's some initial efforts around countering human trafficking and things like this. So that's really exciting to see, right? Because what we're seeing is that the investment we've made in terrorism-related information sharing across the distributed, decentralized, and coordinated information sharing environment, agencies that make up that information sharing environment, whether they're federal, state, or local, are under their own authorities leveraging their investment across their mission space. And that's enhancing the the safety of the public and our national security.
When you went through all the changes that have happened, you talk about fusion centers and other types of centers. How do you ensure that there's not this overload of centers?
The public safety enterprise in this country is large and fairly fragmented. It's that way by design, right? The 10th Amendment to the Constitution, those powers not explicitly enumerated for the federal government devolved to the states, devolved to the people. 18,000 police departments in this country, 90% of which have 50 or fewer sworn officers. This was not centrally planned. It arose organically. And all of these different centers that I just mentioned came up in response to specific high-priority threats, right? The fusion centers as a result of 9/11, the HIDAs as a result of the war on drugs in the 80s. The RIS centers, they go back to the 70s, the war on regional organized crime. What you're seeing now is that we are tying it together. So when you look at it, it does look complex, but you can't oversimplify. And the important point here is that, so many a decade plus after 9/11, it's way less complex and it works way better than it used to. And even more important, we're on a great trajectory. Progress is starting to compound. And you see that with, I'll give you an example. So there's a real problem with heroin in this country. It's particularly pronounced on the East Coast. Our state and local stakeholders and our federal stakeholders are seeing this. And there is an active effort underway, leveraging ISE initiatives and frameworks, to counter the heroin threat, looking at real-time information collection. And what's particularly interesting here is that not only do you have a handle on, in near real-time through the Fusion Center Network with DEA, and so forth, what's going on. You also have been able to bridge between the public safety community and the public health community, two communities that traditionally don't necessarily work together, right? Why? Because they have different missions, different policy frameworks. So they've been able to bridge that. And it's not hard to understand why. Heroin is a public health threat, right? You need to be able to treat people and get that message out. You also need to be able to tackle the underlying enabling networks. So this is all kind of coming out of reuse of the frameworks that we've championed over the last decade plus.
It's a great segue because the annual report to Congress outlines a lot of different priority areas, a lot of different progress in those priority areas, whether it's information sharing around cybersecurity or incident management or watch listing and screening. Let's go through some of the more examples. The heroin example is a good one. Let's take it maybe down another level and give me some ideas of where the federal government specifically are making the biggest progress around information sharing. Maybe start with cybersecurity and information sharing.
I'd like to go into a specific example that we've been involved in around an effort that the FBI has been promoting. The FBI, the NCIJTF, National Cybersecurity Investigatory Joint Task Force, working with our state and local partners. So they've been piloting the idea of investigatory referrals, right? So, they're able to develop some information. They want to, it's valid to pursue. Our state and local partners, the state equivalents of the Bureau, the criminal investigative agencies, are building capacity and want to be able to participate in this activity, but in a unity of effort kind of way. So the FBI has been piloting with Utah, New York State, and some others, the idea of investigatory referrals. This has been fairly successful. And just recently, my office, in partnership with DHS, FBI, and others, sponsored a summit that was in Salt Lake City. 38 states were there. And the focus of this was how to scale up the activity. Really critical, because when you think about it, cybersecurity is a big challenge, lots of different dimensions to it, but a big part of it is cybercrime. And being able to get this unity of effort, being able to bring a whole of government approach to cybersecurity information sharing and to be able to counter the threat, critically important, critically important. One of the lessons we've learned post 9/11.
Let's go into that just another level down. When you talk about the summit and 38 states there and the pilots with Utah and New York State, the idea here is if New York State, for instance, sees a cybercrime or gets evidence that a cybercrime either happened or is happening, and that could be anything from stealing of data theft, or it could be anything as the spear phishing attacks where you're trying to maybe get money from somebody. What's the unity of effort? Are they alerting the FBI? The FBI is alerting them. Talk a little bit about the pilot and what happens.
The FBI has a system called iGuardian, right? So that is a place where state and local law enforcement in particular can identify cyber-related incidents and share them with the Bureau. This particular investigatory referrals are really going in the other direction, where the NCIJTF develops certain information, that warrants an investigation. But they're limited in terms of resources, right? And so the goal here is to share the leads, the investigatory package, if you like, with these state organizations. Now, the protocol's worked out to make sure that there's that shared information that goes back and forth as these things develop, right, to make sure that there's full coordination within policy, that privacy is protected, that, the information is dealt with securely, and all of those sort of considerations. But the goal here is for the states to be the force multiplier. Also, the states want to have an independent capability to be able to look at cyber-related issues that have a nexus in their state and to be able to pursue those and create a deterrent effect. And to tie that to law enforcement activities, prosecutions.
Let's move over to maybe another example, maritime domain awareness. Offer just a few other examples of where success has happened maybe not just over the last year, but you really started to see some of the fruits of all that labor.
Maritime's a great area. We work closely with our colleagues in the maritime domain awareness area. In the Navy, Naval Intelligence, Coast Guard, Department of Transportation, Department of Homeland Security, state and local partners. The maritime domain awareness community is built out and has promulgated the maritime domain awareness architecture. That architecture fully leverages information sharing environment tools, the common profile, use of NEEM, the National Information Exchange Model, our approaches to access, attribute-based access control, and all the rest. They really are exemplars, and actually just recently published on our Project Interoperability, the GitHub site, exemplar artifacts, the description of the maritime information sharing environment. They're building out a functional standard or suite of functional standards around maritime domain awareness, things like vessel of interest information, bill of ladings, things like that. So we've also been working with them to support them and encourage them as they've been doing implementations. So under their own steam, they're doing implementations. We've also been involved in a couple of pilot projects, a maritime information broker in the Port of Baltimore. We have a project that's been going pretty well up in the Puget Sound to test out these concepts. Now, some of that testing out involves technology. Some of it involves just bringing stakeholders together to develop requirements and buy into an approach. So what I would go back to is encourage your listeners to look at our project interoperability site. We highlight, you know, their artifacts. They graciously agreed to share that information, so it's an example for others to, you know, on how to use project interoperability.